He loved life.
Local leaders say Wadia is an innocent bystander of hate connected to the...
Whenever anyone suggests that Israel is willfully killing civilians, that is the most ignorant, bigoted, anti-Semitic bull ever.
He has been an agent of death and destruction.
You've seen this,
calling
huh?
for it.
There cannot be a ceasefire. Anyone who calls for a ceasefire is a terrorist sympathizer under these circumstances.
Yeah, applauding it.
Well, you know, I think you're going to see a new playbook. And I think a lot of Palestinians are going to get killed.
Came out and found her six-year-old son, Wadia Alfayoumi, wounded beyond belief.
This young boy was stabbed 26 times.
Only a tough story to report on tonight.
He attempted to choke her and said, "You Muslims must die."
71-year-old Joseph Shuba now facing first-degree murder, attempted first-degree murder, and two counts of hate crime charges.
A 12-inch knife was still in his body when he was taken for an autopsy.
Somebody was radicalized. Somebody did the radicalizing.
Israel kills enough of these sons of bitches.
It's unacceptable. It's disgusting. Think Israel shutting off water, power, and food to Gaza is insane? It doesn't even make sense. Like, what's the end goal there exactly?
This guy right here, this guy's trying to build a Dawah center in our country. I'm not talking to you right now, you're a sellout. You're trying to build a Dawah center here. Islam is violent by nature.
Assalamu alaikum, brothers and sisters. This is exactly why we need the Deen Center, because we have over 300 million Americans who know nothing about Islam, like this guy.
You want to have a talk?
Yeah, this guy's trying to build a Dawah center in our country. And Surah 9 is the most violent chapter of the Quran.
The Deen Center will be a source of light, a mega Dawah center, an educational center, helping our brothers and sisters in humanity truly understand Islam and Muslims. And brothers and sisters, remember the great rewards of just guiding one person in humanity to the truth is better than everything in this dunya. So get in on all the rewards and blessings. Click the link below, donate right now. May God Almighty Allah reward all of you.
Bismillah, alhamdulillah, assalamu alaikum, greetings of peace. We have some very heartbreaking news.
Police say the boy and his mother had been targeted because they're Muslim.
An act of hatred against this Palestinian family. This is one of the last pictures taken of Wadia Alfayoumi, who just a couple of weeks ago celebrated his sixth birthday. His life was brutally taken away yesterday morning at his home in unincorporated Plainfield after he was stabbed 26 times with a military-style knife. Will County investigators saying today he and his mother were attacked by their landlord, Joseph Chuba. The 71-year-old is now charged with first-degree murder, attempted first-degree murder, and two counts of committing a hate crime.
What we have is a murdered Palestinian child by someone who is radicalized by the environment in which we live right now that casts Palestinians as human animals.
Just developed. I'm here with Ahmed Rehab here in the studio.
This is the Deen Show.
Dude, I love you, man. Mashallah. All the work that you're doing.
When I was ready to talk about it, I would only talk to you.
And I was explaining how much respect I have for the faith of Islam.
Welcome to the Deen Show. The Deen Show.
Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
Just came from the press conference. We often see these things now that are developing on the other side of the world, and you wouldn't think now, you know, you are on your way to see me, and then you tell me that right here in our backyard, we had fill us in. What happened?
Yeah, this interview was pre-planned, and we were supposed to have it earlier today, but we had to delay it because of this incident, and you were there at the press conference, and you saw and heard. Sadly, you know, our worst nightmare came to fruition.
A warning to our viewers, the details ahead are indeed disturbing.
You're right. We live in an interconnected world in all the good and bad ways, and what happens in some places affect what happens in others. A hate crime, a horrible, heinous attack on a six-year-old boy and his mother by their landlord. Knocked on the door, the mother opened the door.
He knocked on the door and that he attempted to choke her and said, "You Muslims must die."
He attempted to choke her and he stabbed her and he's yelled things like, "You Muslims need to die." She ran into the bathroom to call 911, and by the time she was out, he had located her 6-year-old son, stabbed him 26 times. The 12-inch knife was still in his body when he was taken for an autopsy. And she says in the texts to her husband from the hospital where she sits in serious condition, this all happened in seconds. You know, we're at a loss of words.
Mm-hmm.
When you have something like this happen in our backyard here in Plainfield in the Naperville district, what is lauded as one of the safest and best neighborhoods to raise a family in the United States, not
just in
Illinois.
One of the safest places to raise a family, huh?
Yeah, and this wasn't, you know, an arbitrary crime. This was a crime of hate, a hate crime. And somebody was radicalized. Somebody did the radicalizing.
Israel kills enough of these sons of bitches that this is not a problem.
This person wasn't always like this, according to the family. As a matter of fact, the family says he was rather decent with them.
He said he helped build a
treehouse that police say the suspect built for the victim. No warning signs. You've never had any bad interactions with your neighbor?
No, with John, no.
The father says, who doesn't live with the family because the parents are divorced, is just the mother who's 32 and the son who's 6, that the father said that he had built the son a treehouse in the backyard, and he would get him toys. And he was generally nice to them. So when he knocked on the door, they didn't suspect much. He'd been angry about what's going on in the news, and he'd been watching a lot of the news, which takes me to the context of this. And I got to say before I go there that ultimately the hand that stabs is the hand that's to blame, right? We as a Muslim community don't like to extend blame to the entire community when a Muslim acts up. So that's pretty clear. But the context in which this person, who otherwise seemed normal, became such a monster, you know, was brainwashed. That context is something for us to pause and think about. The context of the one-sided, lopsided statements by politicians, elected officials, by the, you know, one-sided coverage by the media day in, day out, that built up such a frenzy of hatred by otherizing Muslims, Palestinians, dehumanizing Palestinians, even as Palestinians in Gaza are being decimated.
What does the situation on the ground look like now?
Well, I am standing in Ashhada al-Aqsa Hospital, which is located in Deir al-Balah in southern Gaza. And this is where basically the Israeli military asked Gazans to evacuate. And what we are witnessing right now is whole families, children, women arriving to the hospitals. The Israeli warplanes attacked, airstriked a home that belonged to Abu Jbara family located in Deir al-Balah in southern Gaza. We saw whole families. I myself saw children, at least 10 children under the age of 5, with their heads cut off, their bodies. If you can see around me, we can still see the ambulances arriving to the Shuhada al-Aqsa Hospital, mostly women, mostly children. I mean, this is indescribable. This is like a massacre.
From the skies. You're talking about almost, probably now more than double the number of victims in the Saturday attack in Israel happening in Gaza, sanctioned this time by the world, by the United States, by our president, by our governor, by our mayor, by our elected officials, by our media. The same exact voices that expressed rightly such, you know, rage about targeting innocent civilians in Israel, those same voices are now supporting what is happening. They're saying, I stand with Israel. And that to me is a clear message of support as to what Israel is doing to the Palestinians. So you're talking about 2,250 civilians killed in Gaza and more. We're still counting. 725, at least of whom are children. Hospitals being attacked. Even as the entire Gaza Strip only has 2,500 beds in all of its hospitals, and we're talking about tens of thousands of people injured, bodies strewn on the floor in the kitchens and the bathrooms. Those jam-packed hospitals, as these defenseless people attempt to, you know, bring life to these bodies, they're being bombed. A million individuals, civilians, being commanded to leave their homes from the north of Gaza to the south. That's an exodus. That's a stampede. that's a recipe for humanitarian crisis. And these are not just my words, but that's also the assessment of the United Nations. Given 24 hours to do so, or else. These are the conditions we're talking about. All of this in the already ravaged, you know, open-air prison that is Gaza, completely sealed off, food, water, shelter, food, water, fuel, electricity. And it's hunting season. You know, he's shooting, you know, fish in a barrel. They're sitting ducks. So this is happening. And then on top of it, those Palestinians, Americans living here, you know, heartbroken, worried sick for their family, frustrated by this injustice and by the double standards, are subjected to acts like this. And you can just imagine where they are mentally right now, where their hearts are, where their feelings are. And this father, he said two things to me that were very powerful. The first, he said, I said, you know, keep your faith strong. Allah's will is supreme, and your son is an angel. He's in paradise. And he said, me and my children, all of us, can be sacrificed for Palestine. And the second thing he said, I came here for my children. And he started to tear up. He's been strong. He's been steadfast. He's broken, right? He's in shock. You know, he's completely destroyed inside. But he's putting up his best face. But at that moment, you know, his voice cracked. He said, I came here for my children. And now I'm burying them. And this is his only child, the six-year-old. They just celebrated his birthday a couple of weeks ago. And this beautiful little boy, this darling boy, Wadia, let's call him by his name. He loved basketball. He loved soccer. He loved coloring, bright colors. He loved to swing around. He asked his father, what does he love? And he looked at me and he laughed in pain and said, he's a six-year-old boy. He loves everything. He loves everyone. He doesn't understand what's happening in the world. But this radicalized man and what he did to him and his mother has now brought so much pain that will never leave the mother or the father or the extended community, the family, for the rest of their lives.
Well, I want people to really paint that picture in their mind. I mean, so this is, they were living there for 2 years, and she's now at home. And this is the landlord, so it's not some nut job off the street. It's a house, not an apartment building, so it's not just some, you know, fringe person that you just don't know. It's your landlord. And you've developed some kind of relationship. But then you can see how powerful the, what we call this hate propaganda, this atrocity propaganda, the likes of Ben Shapiro.
Person who does not value life or children or decency the same way that you do.
He's been absolutely ridiculous. He's been horrible.
Israel kills enough of these sons of bitches that this is not a problem. Whenever anyone suggests that Israel is willfully killing civilians, that is the most ignorant, bigoted, anti-Semitic bullshit ever.
He has been an agent of death and destruction.
You've seen this.
Calling for it.
There cannot be a ceasefire. Anyone who calls for a ceasefire is a terrorist sympathizer under these circumstances.
You know, applauding it.
They say that I want America to fight wars for Israel. Nope. First of all, Israel can take care of herself.
If Israel is forced to the wall, the possibility of nuclear exchange is extremely high. That is why it is very important that the United States provide the material aid to Israel.
Here, get the f*** out of the country. This is Jewish country only. You will need Muslims here.
In God's name.
I don't know how you can watch someone like that and not feel like, you know, and categorizing, you know, the human beings as animals now. So this person, if he's watching someone like Ben Shapiro, if he's listening to Jordan Peterson,
give him hell.
Give him hell. So what happens now, this gets into your blood, your mind, your psyche, and you're seeing, and then the whole, not to talk about, you have the CNN, Sarah Sidner,
yeah.
CNN's journalist, apologizes for making claims of Palestinian beheaded children.
Do you care about the babies that were beheaded?
No,
the babies?
They were never beheaded. That was a made-up story.
How
it's
do you
not
know?
True. It's show me the pictures now.
So what about
show 19? Me the pictures. You're a lying full of You're full of
The reporting by one Israeli TV channel that 40 babies were murdered by Hamas, including being beheaded, makes a number of the front pages. We have asked on three occasions the IDF to confirm. They have not confirmed this reporting.
If you don't read the newspaper, you're uninformed. If you do read it, you're misinformed.
I was the CIA director. We lied, we cheated, we stole. It's like,
well, that went viral, and it started with a soldier who is known for his right-wing tendencies, who spoke to a journalist who's apparently known for being incompetent, because she was.
Mm-hmm.
And then it just became a story, and nobody verified it. And it got all the way to the president, and the president repeated it.
He repeated it.
And by the time they corrected it and retracted it, the damage was done. Now, obviously, it's not to say that other forms of targeting civilians is okay. I mean, happened in Israel is something, you know, I don't condone. I don't, as a Muslim, condone. I don't care where you stand on the conflict, et cetera. As a Muslim, I'm pretty clear, you don't target civilians.
Absolutely.
It's not something,
yes,
I would ever condone, even for a just cause. But I thought we all agreed on that. I thought both sides agreed on that. But the same side that agreed with me that this is atrocious when it happened in Israel suddenly turned around and applauded it, accepted it, and on top of it cheered for it, on top of it became material support for it, gave $8 billion, gave our biggest frigate, our biggest warship for it, and gave every piece of moral support, every statement you can give, that I stand with this, is what they're telling us. And that's very confusing to me, because I'm supposed to be the terrorist sympathizer.
Do you think now this, all this that we're talking about, and then the lie that spread all across the globe, babies beheaded, this man is seeing that, he's getting pumped up now, he's got a Palestinian tenant.
That's part of it, but it's not this one story. It's, you know, the whole atmosphere.
The atmosphere, right, along with the story.
That failed to distinguish between actors of a crime, mm-hmm, and people, rank and file, families. And moreover, giving their blessing to the decimation of these hundreds of thousands of people from the skies. Dehumanizing them as human animals, per the verbatim language of the Israeli defense minister. Nobody chided him for that. Nobody, you know, approached him with any words of criticism for using these racist, inhumane terms. But that set the ground for how a lot of the media and the politicians in America, thanks to the political pressures in this country, they've sold their souls, they've showed cowardly, immoral leadership, and they've just piled on. And so someone like that person, some weak-minded, weak-souled person, becomes radicalized, becomes brainwashed, and acts upon it. They've turned neighbor on neighbor. This is somebody who built a treehouse. Now he's somebody who's stabbing his tenants to death.
Choker and said, "You Muslims must die."
And we have to pause and ask, what is the power of media? What is the power of this one-sided, you know, volume, this onslaught of material that breeds and fans the flames of hate? Yeah.
I'm just trying to wrap my mind around it. It just, all this that's developing.
We've seen this before, Eddie, haven't we? We've seen this post 9/11.
You would think that we learned from this. And
we haven't learned a thing. We're back to square one.
We're back to square one, it seems like, huh?
Because the moment we're under pressure, we fall back to that stupid stampede style. And it's not mindless, actually. It's mindful. They know what they're doing. They know that there is another side to the story. They know that Palestinians suffered for 75 years. They know that what Hamas did does not represent Palestinian history, Palestinian life. You know, the grievances, the absolutely legitimate grievances Palestinians have cannot be summarized and shut down in this little capsule that they call Hamas. And then they love to harp on that because that takes away from the larger story and the larger context and all the suffering and all the abuse and all the dispossession, the occupation itself, which is the root cause of this conflict, and the oppression, the apartheid regime that comes along with it. Nobody wants to talk about that. Instead, they want to extend Hamas to the entire Palestinian population, if not the entire Muslim population, and breed fear and hatred and scaremonger against all Palestinians, Arabs, and Muslims. And so they can justify their war crimes, and so they can have a cover for the immoral, you know, death and destruction that they're wreaking on regular people.
Mm-hmm. So it's not that people can understand when they cut off the food, the water, the electricity, you have 2 million people, human beings. So they know now, they know they're violating human rights. Agencies, organizations are stepping up. The war crimes are being committed.
Targeted attacks on civilian infrastructure with the clear aim
to cut off men, women, children of water, electricity and heating with the winter coming. These are acts of pure terror, and we have to call it as such.
Collective punishment.
Collective punishment. Right. But it's not that people can't identify that the human rights, they understand the human rights, but they have a problem distinguishing who's human, it seems like.
It's just a double standard.
Yeah.
I mean, we understand that these acts are wrong when it's the right victim. If it's Israelis, if it's Ukrainians, if it's
so that's the game. Okay, they're human, but they're these are
if
animals.
It's in Europe, if it's a white population, but somehow when it comes to brown and black, quite frankly, we don't seem to get it. All of a sudden, we get confused, and we can still see in front of our very own eyes the same images of destruction, right, targeting civilians, hospitals, schools, neighborhoods, but suddenly, we don't have the same response. We don't have the same morality. And suddenly we're excusing it. And we're saying, oh, but they use these civilians as human shields. His hat got in the way of my bullet.
Yeah, you've heard probably most of these talking points. It seems like they got a memo and just everyone is repeating the same talking points.
I call it a stampede of madness, of immorality, of hypocrisy, of hate. It's a stampede, just like the wildebeest, mindless. You know, I talk about human animals. It's human animalistic to fan the flames of hate and to excuse the murder of civilians at this level.
There's a lot of Christians also are starting to wake up to this and call other Christians who have gone towards the Zionism and calling them away from this. But I'm also just shocked because you see, you know, our friends and others who are out there, many conservative Christians who now have fallen into this trap and they're going down this direction. And you have Jesus, who we love, is one of the mightiest messages, obviously. We love Jesus, peace be upon him.
He was just a prophet. And, right?
No. We don't even believe he was a prophet.
What do you think he was? What do you guys think?
What do I think he was historically? I think he was a Jew who tried to lead a revolt against the Romans and got killed for his trouble, just like a lot of other Jews at that time who were crucified for trying to lead revolts against the Romans and got killed for their trouble.
And he's the Prince of Priests, and we preach this love your neighbor, this, that, and the other. But it seems like, and I was listening to this Palestinian Christian, and he was like, talking against the Zionism and the Christians, he's just really disappointed how they've pretty much forgotten about them, the Christians there.
Right. That's a missing part of the story. Again, all of these human stories are missing because they only want to talk about Hamas. Because when they only talk about Hamas, they're able to render Palestinians as orcs, right? As sort of, you know, they're orcs. Just an extension of a militant group that kills.
You've heard this term that they call them now, orcs, huh?
I mean, that's the description I would use as to how they're.
This is a rabbi, actually. I was listening to one of the on the extreme side, was actually.
Oh, he did actually use that term. Somehow, I didn't even know that.
I just want to say this to our Christian friends. Mm-hmm. You know, just to call it as it is and say it straight out. You know, you guys are worshiping one Jew. That's a mistake. You should be worshiping every single one of us because we all die for your sins every single day. And that's exactly what's going on here. Yeah. We're all God's firstborn. We're dying for your sins right now because the Jewish people in the land of Israel are the bulwark against the orcs. Mm-hmm. Okay? The orcs are coming not to a theater near you, but to your home.
I actually
didn't know that.
Yeah.
But that's how they're trying to present Palestinians. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, listen, you have to justify mass murder somehow. So to do it, you need to dehumanize those you're trying to wipe out so that nobody can come after you and say that you are a mass killer, that you are engaging in state terror. You have to justify your act. And so you have to build up the hatred. You have to build up the dehumanization. And that's why they only want to talk about one word, but they don't want to talk about the actual life that is Palestinian life, the weddings, the graduations, the dinner parties, the families, the shopkeepers, the everyday life. That doesn't exist. All of that doesn't exist. It's just a bunch of militants and an outgrowth that is the Palestinians to it. Mind you, this whole conflict began in 1947, 1948, years before Hamas was ever formed. Hamas is a consequence to the creation of Israel, among many other consequences. And so to start history at that point and the conflict at that point, and then also to start it last Saturday, not to be able to contextualize larger issues. This is not to excuse the act. As I said earlier, when we're referring to this landlord, those who commit a crime by their hand, they are to blame. But how can we talk about the larger conflict if we only have the memory of Saturday? We don't have the memory of the air raids before that. The murder of many, if murdering civilians is the issue, which I think it is, then how come there was no concern? How come there was no outrage when 30, 40 times the number of civilians that were killed in Israel were killed in Palestine over the last few years happened through air raids, through settler violence? And it's not just about murder. It's about the humiliation and the dispossession, taking land, taking homes, forcing people out at will, impunity, nowhere for you to go. Gaza itself, by the way, these 2 million, these are not natives to Gaza. These are already displaced people whose lands have already been confiscated, whose possessions have already been taken, who've been forced into Gaza, a lot of them. And now they're being forced into southern Gaza. And from there, God knows where. Maybe they'll push them into Egypt or out into Jordan and so on and so forth. That is part of the story. Now, they can ignore that all day long, but the world knows the context. And how can you bring peace if you can't even acknowledge reality, if there's no accountability, right? So what we're seeing right now is a clown show, frankly. It's delusional. It's double, you know, it's duplicitous. There's a double standard. I'm all for having clear moral standards when it comes to not targeting civilians. But I would want the other side, those who are pro-Israel, to show that they actually stand for that. I don't think that they do.
I want to share a couple clips with you.
What can the people that are not familiar with how IDF operates learn? Meaning, allegedly they sent 3,000 texts to Palestinian citizens urging them to leave. They've dropped leaflets. They've dropped food before. They do what it's called, I believe, roof knocks. That's saying, hey, you've got 5 minutes to vacate the building because we've identified this building as a place that a missile came from. So meaning they're trying to limit civilian casualties. Whereas obviously Hamas will gladly rape and pillage whoever they come across. What should the world know about how the IDF is operating to save civilian lives?
Well, you know, I think you're going to see a new playbook. And I think a lot of Palestinians are going to get killed. There's nowhere to go.
I mean, this is what they call gaslighting, right?
Gaslighting.
This is gaslighting. I mean, this is insane propaganda. I mean, imagine if I were to tell you, hey, Eddie, you and your family, you got 5 minutes to get out of here. I warned you. And then I wreak havoc on your house. Now, imagine if I say this about your neighborhood. Imagine if I say this about your city. Imagine if I say this about your entire country. I mean, you're talking about 1 million people. That's half the population leaving. So half the population has homes in which missiles are being launched from. It's not about that. And this whole so-called benevolent IDF is part of that ridiculous propaganda. I mean, the IDF is created to gun down Palestinians, to take over land. We have a right to defend themselves, they say. But do you have a right to occupy? Do you have a right to attack? Do you have a right to raid? Do you have a right to kill civilians? That seems to be what they believe is part of self-defense. So now we have a problem as to the definition of self-defense. And when you move the goalpost that way, it becomes a semantic exercise. It becomes a game. And that's what we're seeing. And there are a bunch of those tropes, a bunch of those canards, a bunch of those excuses. You hear, whenever the numbers come out and they can't dispute them of how many people die and how innocent they are because they're children and women, if they were men, they would just attribute them being, you know, militants.
Yes.
So, okay, let's talk about the children and the women. And then what did he do? Then they go to the point that, oh, well, we were just shooting the militants, but they used the children and women as human shields.
You always hear this, yes.
You always hear this.
How do you respond to that?
I mean, is that what you did when you were attacked in Israel? Were these dead Israeli women and children human shields? What gives you the right or the thought that you're human enough to want your women and children to live, but that Palestinians are so subhuman that they want their children and women to die to protect themselves, these men? At the very root of this, regardless if it's Hamas or whoever, right? The very notion, and this is something that they address to the entire Palestinian population, to the Palestinian makeup, right? It's meant to dehumanize Palestinians, that they're less than you and me, that they don't have normal familial relationships. They don't have normal human instincts. They're human animals. And they do it as they raise their country, their land, to the ground. If you can call it a country. I mean, this strip is essentially an open-air prison. It's called a strip for a reason.
Many call it now a
reservation,
a concentration camp.
That's pretty much what it is. And they've tried. Palestinian people, God bless their hearts, are resilient people. And I can't imagine what life is like in a place like this, you know, most densely populated, sealed from all sides. They get to decide what goes in, what comes out, whether it's a pencil or a medicine. And despite of that, they've lived. And they've married, and they've had weddings, and they've had birthday parties, and they've had soccer games, and they've had homework, and they've had school. So they try to live, and that's a testament to Palestinian resilience. But they want to erase Palestinian life. And that's why I tell my Palestinian brothers and sisters, especially the young people who are involved in activism, is drop the slogans, right? The hey-heys, the ho-hos, you know, the chants, and fight back with what matters, your stories. If the idea here, if the strategy here is to dehumanize you so that they can erase you and wipe you out, then you had better humanize you. You had better tell your story. The story of your cousin, of your nephew, of your aunt, of your uncle who is back home, what they're going through. Put a face to the story. And tell the stories of your past, not just your present, your grandparents, your parents, and what they've been through and how they've felt. We can't erase the human when it comes to the Palestinian side, when it comes to understanding or covering the Palestinian side. But that's what the media has done consistently. That's definitely what the Israeli government and its modus operandi when it comes to its communication and propaganda has done. That is what the United States, in lockstep with Israel, has done. That's what this horrible man who killed this innocent child has fallen for. And so the way to fight back is existence is resistance. Mm-hmm. Exist with your story.
What do you like to say when people go, they say, okay, this was when they go historically, and then you hear them using this argument now that this is our land. This is the Jewish land. This is from 3,000 years ago. And now this is our birthright. How do you like to answer this?
You know, I am not interested in these types of debates and conversations, because what you're going to have is one side, whatever you tell them, mm-hmm. is going to have some answer for that. It's going to have some alternative view of what you're saying, and vice versa. These debates go nowhere. What we're talking about right now is not some academic debate. What we're talking about right now is human rights abuse. That's what we've been talking about. That's what's been happening. What we're talking about is humanitarian crises. What we're talking about is war crimes. And in instances, the civilians are target acts of terror, whether it is, you know, by militants or by governments and their militaries. And so that's what interests me in terms of we have to have that tough conversation, and we have to level and say, look, you can't get away with this. Mm-hmm. You have to be accountable for this. Those who say, I stand with Israel, have to own this. That's you telling me this. It's not me. You say I stand with Israel. So you say I stand with war crimes. You're telling me you stand with oppression and occupation. You're telling me you stand with raising hospitals to the ground in neighborhoods, killing of women and children. The stats are there. The numbers are there. The stories are there. You're telling me you stand with that. I don't tell you I stand with terrorism. I've never told you that. You accuse me of that. I've never said I stand with that. But you say you stand with Israel. So you stand with what Israel does.
Mm. And you have, you see Israeli, Jewish, you have people. I recently saw an Israeli Jewish man. He's crying.
It's unacceptable. It's disgusting. I've seen videos, I saw videos of Palestinian dads holding his dead, like, five-year-old daughter. I mean, and there was another one that, like, as a father, it's even hard to talk about. This dude was holding his infant. It was like a year old. And he was like patting her on the back and saying like his final goodbye. I mean, it was, he's holding her like she's alive, like he's just burping her or something. I didn't expect to get emotional about that, but like, I'm a new dad and that shit really fucks me up. And I hate to see it. It's not right. I think people in Israel that support the government and the government need to watch that shit. I think Israel shutting off water, power, and food to Gaza is insane. It doesn't even make sense. Like, what's the end goal there exactly?
This is a cruelty and a brutality that is unbelievable. And Joe Biden talks about the other side, the Palestinians, as being evil. This is such hypocrisy. It is enraging. This hypocrisy, these attempts to show the other side as evil while completely glossing off the savagery by Israel and with the support, like you said earlier, support of the United States. Look at these pictures. What do you think is under this rubble? This is all civilian. It's always civilians. 55% of the people in Gaza are under the age of 18. It's an entire society of children.
But if you're a human being, like a human being, right? Hang with me for 1 second. So as soon as I heard that Israel cut off Palestine's water, my first thought was, who the cuts off water to millions of children and civilians during a time of war? What kind of a barbaric act is that? And my second thought was, wait, why the Israel control Palestine's water? And a brief search got me to this by Amnesty International titled The Occupation of Water. All right. Soon after Israel occupied the West Bank, including East Jerusalem and the Gaza Strip, the Israeli military authorities consolidated complete power over all water resources and water-related infrastructure in the occupied Palestinian territories, OPT. And I know what you're thinking. Well, they took over existing infrastructure, so built some new one. Israeli Military Order 158 stated that Palestinians could not construct any new water installation without first obtaining a permit from the Israeli army. Since then, the extraction of water from any new source, the development of any new water infrastructure would require permits from Israel, which are near impossible to obtain. It gets they are unable to drill new water wells, install pumps, or deepen existing wells, in addition to being denied access to the Jordan River, right? Israel even controls the collection of rainwater throughout most of the West Bank, and rainwater harvesting cisterns owned by Palestinian communities are often destroyed by the Israeli army. As a result, some 180 Palestinian communities in rural areas in the occupied West Bank have no access to running water. They don't have access to f***ing water, bro. What the f***? Here. Because the resulting disparity in access to water between Israelis and Palestinians is truly staggering. Water consumption by Israelis is at least four times that of Palestinians living in the OPT. Palestinians consume an average of 73 liters of water per day per person, which is well below the World Health Organization's recommended daily minimum. Minimum, mother. In rural areas, it's as low as 20 liters per person per day. And how much water do Israelis drink? Sure, I'll tell you. By contrast, an average Israeli consumes approximately 300 liters of water per day. You see, we talk a lot about values, but let me tell you something about American values. If I took my dog to a restaurant right now, the server or the owner on their own dime would bring out a cup of water for a stranger's This isn't during wartime. This is status quo. What kind of an insidious government will make it a point to make sure intentionally that an entire population stays thirsty? People out here talking about freedom, voting rights, passports, airplanes.
He's watching, he's saying, look, you know, it's blowing his mind. I don't know if you saw many of these videos. You know, people who just have a heart, their heart is, when they're seeing, like you're saying, the human side, they're not falling for these are animals. And they're seeing actually images. Now, this is not fake news. They're seeing all of the hospital footage. They're seeing fathers with their children.
That's a fair point.
You're seeing body parts all over the place.
Look, in Israel proper, right, you have people who are so incensed, Israelis, Jewish Israelis, who are so incensed with what's happening in their name. And they let it be known. And some of them are reporters. Some of them are some newspapers, like the Haaretz. Some of them are influencers. Some of them are everyday people.
They're a smaller minority that need to go ahead and
They're vociferous.
Yes.
Definitely, they're not in the majority. Otherwise, you wouldn't have Netanyahu in power. The majority voted for him, at least a plurality. And looking at the general propaganda in Israel on their television, on their news, and on their social media, definitely these voices are in the minority. But they exist. And in the United States, they exist as well. I mean, Jews some of them who consider themselves to be pro-Israel, some who don't. But you have those voices who are pretty clear about their condemnation of the human rights abuses in the name of Israel or in general.
Yeah.
Right? And I was called by a rabbi who we had, you know, gone off on the wrong footing, and this guy's a pretty well-known leader in the Orthodox Jewish community. And he was pretty genuine, right, when he called me and said, look, there's hurt in my community, but I'm calling to express, you know, my empathy with the hurt in yours, to ask how you're doing. You know, he said, I don't want to debate. You know, I said the same thing. And he didn't call to Levi a litmus test, right? It was a human-to-human conversation.
Yeah.
And we had gone off to the wrong footing, but I had confronted him about what was the problem, and he had clarified and apologized, and we became something of friends. And so a little later he called and he said, I've been thinking about what you said about our common humanity, and I've been thinking about the pain in your community. And I appreciated that, that sense of goodwill. And that's all we're asking for here, right? We're asking for us to become, to be the humans that we are. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't want us to fall into tribalism and territorialism and teams, Muslims, Jews, right? This, that. I think we need to fall back on our common humanity. Draw your virtues and values from wherever you want. For me, it's from Islam.
Mm-hmm.
But show me who you are through your positions, through your stances, and moreover, through your actions. And, you know, it's easy to propagandize. It's easy to throw terms like, you know, terrorist, terrorist sympathizer, terrorist supporter. But, you know, I've never stood for the murder of any civilian. But I see today, in my country, in the United States of America, from my president all the way down to some shoddy influencer like Ben Shapiro, expressions that support the murder of civilians, or at least excuse them, or at least contextualize them as okay.
What do you suggest, you know, how do you tackle, because you're seeing so many videos, you're seeing so many things coming up, and it seems like one of the things that you're getting to see is you're getting to see people's colors, you're getting to see people, you know, their true self coming out. We don't have a problem if somebody's doing something against, because I think that's another important thing is why Islam is, it's authentic. You have everything there from when you wake up in the morning to when you go to sleep. Everything is laid out beautifully. So we can call out someone if they're doing something opposite to Islam. If somebody's going out there and killing innocent people, we have clear, the Prophet Muhammad, he clearly forbade killing innocent men, women, and children. It's very crystal clear. You can't get around it. So now, how about on the other side? You've seen these videos.
Where are you from?
I'm from Israel.
Are you an IDF soldier?
Yes, I am.
Didn't the IDF, they bombed Gaza? And they,
yeah, of course.
And they killed hundreds of children?
I don't know about it, okay? I just know that we bombed them because they bombed us, okay? And
what about before that? Why did they bomb you guys?
I don't know why, okay? Maybe something like a lot of years ago, but...
You don't know the information? Before Israel, 1948, it was Palestine.
Yeah.
Oh no, it's called Israel.
No, it was called Palestine before 1948.
Maybe it is.
And it still is. Right now it's occupied Palestine, yes.
Yeah.
I wish IDF more children. Okay? And I wish the IDF will find you and kill you, okay?
Why?
Okay.
No,
Israel,
I don't know.
Only Israel, no Palestine. And if you talk it like again, I will
kill
you in your... Okay?
Wait, does he kill innocent Palestinians?
I kill every Palestinian
you see. So every Palestinian you see, you kill?
Every Palestinian you see, I just...
Some of these... And you've seen, actually, the March of Return. Remember the March of Return?
Yeah.
You had like 700... There was no human shields then. These were people in wheelchairs. You were... These were... you had journalists. You had... just your average person who was there. They weren't putting anybody, there was no soldiers there. So they were trying to protest peacefully. And you see, I think it was like 108, almost 200 people were gunned down by the IDF. But then you're seeing the IDF, where are they getting this? You see some rabbis, I don't know if you see these, who are saying, show no mercy.
Anyone who is merciful over vicious people ultimately will become vicious towards merciful people. There is no permission from the Torah to have any mercy whatsoever during war. Not on children, not on women, not on anybody. Why? because if a person understands what is war and why you're fighting.
Yeah. They're actually saying so. Yeah. You're actually in a time of war. You're not supposed to. Have you seen some of these videos?
We of course. It. I mean, you know, there's definitely that component of and then the you have, radicalization, and then you, right? The religious radicalization.
It's out of this world.
I can't, the hyper-nationalist
so radicalization. So now our Christian friends and others who are supporting this, shouldn't they be calling this out? If they see, shouldn't they be stepping up? Like
absolutely, because again, I mean, these are all gimmicks. I mean, you know, when we get these calls from people who say, do you condemn this? Do you condemn that? I say, look, stop. Stop it with your gimmick.
You tell them. Just
I say, stop with your gimmick. You know where I stand because I've never told you otherwise. It's a but gimmick, you're telling me you stand with this, so you got to explain yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Because what it is, it's a distraction tactic. It's put you on the defensive tactic.
Yeah.
I'm supposed to sit on the hot seat and debate some schmuck like Hannity or O'Reilly or somebody while they ask you all these questions and sort of vet your moral character because you're not as moral as he is while this, you know, jerk basically is supporting the murder of children and women and not apologizing for it, beating his chest proudly, saying he stands with it. So no, we're not playing this game.
Yeah.
My virtues and values are clear. They're consistent. I've never said otherwise. And you've told me where you stand. So you need to explain yourself. That's where it's at.
Mm-hmm.
And today, it's again, if it were in the reverse, I'd have the same position. If it were the Palestinians with the massive army, strong army, and the Israelis who were, you know, cooped up in some strip, I would have the same exact moral position. It's not about teams. It's not about colors. It's not about tribes. It's about justice and truth, and the principles are consistent for me. It just so happens that in this instance, we have a clear occupier and occupied, oppressor and oppressed, who happen to be on one side the Israelis, the other side the Palestinians, as it stands today.
Yeah. Have you flipped it and asked them, and how was their response? You interact with a lot of different people. Do you, because obviously your position is clear, we condemn killing of innocent life. Clear, it's clear. We have no problem hesitating in doing this. But when you ask them, do you condemn right now? What is it like? How many babies have been killed right now? 500, 600? How many?
Around that number, yeah, hundreds.
I mean, if a journalist has someone to ask you, do you ask them, do you condemn the killing now of all these hundreds of innocent lives there? Do you condemn?
Well, that's where they obfuscate, meaning that they try
the human rights violations now with the shutting off of food, the collective punishment. Do you condemn the March of Return? The Christian Shireen, her name was journalist, right?
Who was assassinated.
And then all her coffin carriers were brutalized. The list can go on and on.
What
do they say?
They'll always have an excuse. They'll always have a deflection. They'll always have a counterattack. So in the case of what's happening in Palestine, they'll say, well, they brought this upon themselves. At least we're giving them advance notice. Hamas didn't give advance notice in Israel. They've had this land for, you know, whatever number of years. And instead of building it up, they've decided to, you know, send their terrorists upon us. And they'll justify and justify and justify. To which I say, again, we can go back and debate each point and the history and the context, but I'll keep it simple.
What do you say?
You told me, you are the one who told me, that there can be no justification for acts of terror. There can be no justification for the murder of civilians. And I agree with you. I happen to agree with you. But then you reneged on that position, and now you're telling me there is justification sometimes when it's me doing the killing for the murder of civilians. When some people, and there are people in the Muslim community, in the Palestinian, the Arab community, who will have a hard time condemning attacks on Israel because they feel that they will lose political capital. And that's what's happening on the Israeli side. They're obfuscating on the morality because they feel that they're afraid to lose political capital. And so, however, when those attacks happened in Israel, it was clear to me that the Israeli side was saying, you can't ever blame us for this because there's no justification, regardless of the context, regardless of the occupation, regardless of the oppression. This is condemnable, period. Fine. So now are you coming at me and saying that there is some context, some justification, some whatever, mitigating variables for the murder, the mass murder of Palestinians in the Gaza Strip? You see how that double standard works? They can't. When you are morally inconsistent, you are immoral. To be moral, you must have two things, clarity and consistency. The reason they're not clear is because there's cowardice. There's no courage. You need moral courage to be morally clear. And secondly, you need to be consistent. In all situations, you have the same standards. I'm not seeing that from many of those who criticize us, from many of those who attack us. I'm not seeing it from politicians, from the media, from the Israeli side, from the Ben Shapiro's. I mean, that's a guy who's been harping on God, God, God. And he said some very nice things about God and family for the longest time. But his mask has fallen under the stress test.
That's what I'm talking
about.
Now you're getting to see people's true
colors.
Right.
Under
this
the stress
exactly
test, he's been nothing but an agent of darkness, death and destruction.
Agent of darkness.
You know, he's appealing for it. He's raising his hands up to the skies for it. He's claiming God, his God, because he's only his God somehow. Right. Mm-hmm. Justifies this and sanctions this. And there are hundreds of people who applaud him for it. And that's scary. That's scary. And there ain't no FBI watching that Facebook group mm-hmm. or that Facebook page. And the radicalized voices who are calling for murder of civilians and applauding it. But you'll have a Muslim or an Arab or a Palestinian who says something that isn't remotely as abrasive. Mm-hmm. And maybe they'll be contacted or called.
Before we conclude, tell me this. How do you, for the average person, I mean, now they understand, it seems like the mainstream media, same talking points, everything. You're talking about the human story. And people, if they just put themselves in the situation of these human beings, how would they react? Have you seen that movie, Swayze, Red Dawn? Have you ever seen it a long time
ago? I've heard of it. I haven't watched it. No.
This is my generation.
Okay.
A little older than you. But I think people should watch that. I mean, if you just anybody, we're people of the, Second Amendment, really valuing our land, someone steps on our property. What do you think the average American, I mean, you see so much hypocrisy.
We don't get to go so far in the conversation. But if we did, that's a valid point. We're still at the point of like,
if you were just to compare, we put the American and take them out, how would they handle it?
Right.
If we put the British, you would think like, man, these Palestinians are very patient people. They are very merciful.
Right. I mean, you have every American, you know, in every red state, you know, with a rifle or a gun and a sign. Well, that's not every American, but a lot. Get off my lawn! Don't tread on me.
That's what I'm talking about.
And Americans understand that that's a very important thing. As a matter of fact, this entire country was built on a reaction to oppression, on a rejection of oppression, and it was an armed resistance. It was an armed uprising against oppression. And that's been the case in many instances of history, mm-hmm. Western and otherwise. It's only understood and excused as part of a larger context of push and pull, of two sides going at it for different reasons, right? Yeah. But when it comes to other people, it can only be you're just evil and violent, and you're doing it for no goddamn reason other than to spill blood. Now, I'm not talking here about targeting civilians. I'm talking about, military to military type of warfare or struggle. But that's still that kind of understanding still wouldn't be given, right? It's only given in the context of, say, Ukraine.
Yeah.
But if Syrians are trying to defend themselves against the same aggressor, as it so happens, Russian planes, then there's not much support or understanding.
Does it go back to they look like us? They white like us?
That's part of it.
But over here.
Right. And you're Bosnian. Bosnia wasn't okay. Bosnia wasn't okay to defend themselves. There was an armistice. There was basically a ban on arms for Bosnians at the same time
that
they were being subjected to a genocide.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until they had been killed, mass murdered in large numbers, that action began to be taken, right? Yes. And they're white and they're European, but they were Muslim. So now we're seeing something of a theme here. So maybe it's the religion and the race combined. Look, I don't like to be flippant, right? I think at the end of the day, I judge humans on an individual level, not a race level or religion level. But there's definitely a blind spot in our quote-unquote Western civilization when it comes to moral standards, their clarity, their consistency, and their applicability to all people.
Weren't we the ones here from over here? We wanted to prove our point. We wanted to win. Pearl Harbor comes. And next thing you know, I mean, this is not command center. This was a whole, what was it, a whole Hiroshima Nagasaki.
Yeah, I mean, talk about justifying, you know. I mean, and again, there was a context for that, et cetera. So, you know, we're toggling between.
Anyways, we can go down that road, but it's like it just hypocrisy upon hypocrisy. I mean, and you're starting to see people wake up to a lot of things. So just back what I was saying, humanizing the situation. These are not animals. You have the Nelson Mandelas of the world. You had the Jimmy Carter.
Could go to the West Bank and Gaza or even to East Jerusalem and see what's happening now to the Palestinians that would disagree with my use of the word apartheid.
You had so many people who actually went down there. They sat with the human to human. They saw the suffering and they concluded that this is an apartheid state. This is illegal what they're doing. This
violates
all.
Yeah, that's not even debatable. I mean, it's not debatable. It's only propaganda and intentful delusion. I don't think it's even
how many
real
human
delusion.
Rights organizations have condemned this as in Israel there are also human rights organizations that have condemned this also right
the Sling and others absolutely
you know about this.
Yeah that's pretty clear to everybody.
How did they get around this?
Just pretend it didn't happen. Just keep repeating the lie long enough until a lot of people think it's the truth.
Yeah,
and put political pressure and financial pressure where possible. Mm-hmm. And force a singular narrative and push out and censor other narratives. We're seeing this happening in America. And now, if you don't care about Palestine and Israel, if you don't care about, you know, whatever's happening in the Middle East, that's fine. You should still care about your own civil rights, about your own country's values and ideals. You should still care about, for example, freedom of speech and freedom of expression. And for you as a citizen to not be put in a sheep's position where your eyes are covered, there's wool over your eyes and you can't see, and they tell you whatever they want you to believe and you just bleed it out. That should concern you as a free, red-blooded American citizen who says, don't tread on me, you know. But instead, we're seeing a lot of people falling into the minion position, and they're not upset about the fact that they're that America's censoring information, making it hard for them to understand what's going on in the world, mm-hmm. and that our politicians are basically placating what they think is the safer political position. It's not about morality. It's not about values. It's about my seat and how I can maintain it and how I can run for office again. And so it becomes an oligarchy. Mm-hmm. It doesn't become a democracy.
Okay, so final words. What do we say to our friends out there? They, you know, recently before all this kicked off, you had many Christians, Jews, many people who were seeing, you know, what was happening to our children in the schools, the sexualization of kids.
Leave our kids alone! Leave our kids alone! Leave our kids alone!
Man walked into the women's bathroom at McDonald's.
My daughter goes into those bathrooms and no man needs to be in there. You understand me? You are a man. You are created as a man. You are a man. Start acting like a man.
We're seeing like, man, the Muslims are on the front line. They're like the last hope standing, you know, against a lot of these things that are being pushed out there. The destruction of the family and all the other things. They're like, man, we need to ally. We need to work together against all of the greater forces that are coming again. So they saw what the Muslim values were. They see we worship one and only one God. And now everything's kind of been derailed. We're back to square. What would you say to them? What would you say to them who are out there and, you know, to awaken this?
To the allies, to the non-Muslims, or to the Muslims?
To the humans out there, to the non-Muslims.
Well, let me begin with the Muslims. To Muslims, I say, remember your own values, your own standards, and don't let anybody, including anybody's injustice or evil, cause you to reciprocate or to lose sense of your standards and values out of anger, out of frustration, because then they win and you lose. The real strength, the real win, it doesn't matter if you die, right? You win still if you die on your values and standards. That's what our prophet taught
us. Did you see just, and this is real important, this is good, because we will call out our people who are Muslim, our own in the community. We will reprimand them, condemn them. I don't know if this AI, you can't really trust a lot of things that are out there. You saw some of these videos and they're using it against us. The Muslims acting up, maybe saying some things they shouldn't be saying, you know what I mean?
So whether it's true or whether it's false, I'm not adjudicating, I haven't seen those videos, but generally this is the message I'm giving. This is pretty clear. That we have to be a moral people, and we have to have clear standards. We have to let our standards be known, and they have to be consistent. And we shouldn't be afraid, or we shouldn't let any political situation or any situation of duress cause us to falter on these values. Okay, steadfast, consistent, and persistent. Once we've done that, once we can achieve that, and I think, you know, a lot of us are, then we can have some ground to stand on to call on others to the same level of standards. But if you don't have that, you have no leg to stand on. And I say that to everybody, whatever you are. If you're Jewish, you have beautiful, you know, teachings of great moral standing. If you're Christian, you have the same. If you're most of the world's great faiths, if not all, you have something you can stand on. Find what that is. Stand on it. But stand on it with genuine selflessness. If you worship God, then remember, God is in charge, not you. There's only two real religions in the world, if I may. There's the religion of God, and there's the religion of ego. And we believe as Muslims that Christianity, Judaism, Islam, the prophets that came through these movements, right? They're all of the same strain. They're all of God, right? They all preach the same basic message of God. And then you have humans, including those that claim to be following these prophets and these religions. So it's not, these are not two separate domains. They sort of intersect. Humans who've chosen to worship their ego, even as they claim to be men of God or women of God. And so that's the separation for me. You have to check yourself. Are you worshiping your ego? Are you following your ego? Your whims and desires, as the Quran calls it. And he says, have you seen the one who follows their whim and desire? They worship that, right? Mm-hmm. Or do you worship the objective God? And when you do, you can be objective about matters. You're not about tribalism. You're not about territorialism. You're not about, you know, your own interests. You're fair and you're balanced and you're just. God is just, and that's what we aspire to, justice.
Thank you. Ahmed Rehab, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you for shedding some light on this. And thank you guys for tuning in. And we'll see you next time here on The Deen Show. Until then, peace be with you. Assalamu alaikum.
I have no doubt that bi'ithnillahi ta'ala, it will be a successful project, inshallah. I've had the blessing of knowing Brother Eddie since he started The Deen Show, and he's one of the most sincere and most dedicated people to the da'wah that I have ever met. So please do support The Deen Center. Jazakumullahu khairan.
I cannot leave without giving you a gift. If you're not yet Muslim and you're tuning in to see what these Muslims are talking about and you like a free copy of the Quran, go ahead and visit thedeenshow.com. We'll take care of the postage and everything and get it delivered to you. And if you still have some questions about Islam, call us at 1-800-662-4752. We'll see you next time. Until then, peace be with you. Assalamu alaikum.